Okay, good evening, everyone. So welcome to the session where we're going to talk about some of the modern support mechanisms that we are bringing in Outlook 2016 for Exchange Online customers. So if you are a user who was using Outlook 2016 connecting to a Exchange Online mailbox, you're going to start seeing some of the new features which we are releasing and which will help the end user in getting support when they run into issue or help with the features within Outlook. My name is Amir Haq, and I'll be talking about some of the features that have been released in that regard. Then I'll go and talk about Sarah, a new troubleshooting client that we have come up. My colleague Gabe Braddon will talk about some of the new features that we have implemented in Outlook 2016 as a result of that feedback which we have seen coming from customers or the common top issues that they have been running into. Later on, Julia Foran, she's an Outlook PM. She has been working on some of the major changes in calendar sharing model and delegation for all clients, and she'll be going through those architectural changes and the release timeframes. She's gonna join us in a bit. She's doing a demo session in theater right now. Okay, so session objectives and takeaways. Like I mentioned, we're gonna review some of the Outlook features which we have done, recently released in Outlook to make the support easier, getting help aspect easier for its user. In Office 365, you know, if you have called in for support, only the tenant admin can call in a support and create a support incident. End users don't have that facility available to them, right? And you are calling on behalf of them. So our effort is to make things easier for you trying to provide support to your users. We want to bridge that gap and fill up some of those needs, provide some of those features through which they'll be able to help themselves on their own. If you just point them to those resources. And hopefully we'll try to bring their attention within Outlook to those features as well. We'll then go and take a deeper look at the Sarah client, talk about that. Gabe will then demonstrate a couple of new features which we have done recently or released recently in Outlook 2016 to address top support issues. And then, like I said, Julia will go through the new calendar sharing model that's coming soon. To all Exchange Online clients. This is the message that, hey, we are committed to support. We want to make it easier, not just the product use experience. Rather, when you run into issues, it will be easier for you to get help on that as well. The Uber mantra is that Outlook should be able to detect those issues when you run into those issues, present a model to you, a scenario to you, so that you can say, go ahead, diagnose it for me. And then when it comes back with some results, it will also present an option to the end user that, hey, I can fix this for you. And you will be able to just click on yes button and then it will fix it itself. So that's the goal. And you'll see all of those improvements in phases. So some of the improvements which we have released or are available in the early builds to Office Insiders, we're gonna show them over here. And then we'll keep building on those feature sets. And calendar sharing has been a core feature where we have had a lot of support issues, and we have taken them back to the product group, our team working on those features. Julia has seen those issues firsthand, and our ask has mainly been, like customers have been asking, that, hey, this current model does not work, and that's the reason we keep running into issues, or our users are not able to understand it better. Can you simplify it? Can you have the same experience across all clients? Because OWA and Outlook differ today. So that's the key takeaway which she took and then went ahead and redesigned the feature. So let's talk about some of the features that we have released in Outlook 2016 and are available today for users of Outlook 2016. If you have looked at the Outlook UI, there is a top section over there which we now have refactored. So it used to be in earlier versions of Outlook, there used to be a help menu, and that's gone, and it says, tell me what you want to do. And if you go and, for example, start typing some of this stuff, we take cues and the same model or same design which we have implemented in search, if you're looking for items in your mailbox, and we start coming up with some of the suggestions. So you can see that it start presenting Outlook starts presenting the suggestions for calendar sharing, and when you are done with that, then it also has a help topic below that help is available if you want to get some help on this particular topic. When you click on that, some relevant help topics show up, and then you can click on that and get exactly the article when you are, which you are looking for. So this is centric on the end user and trying to help them with the issue so that they can help on their themselves on their own. The help has a very rich content, and we have tried to make it easier working with our user assistance group so that users can follow those instructions in a more easier manner. They are visual, rich content is being used, and also we'll be able to provide feedback, which that team of help writers take very seriously and then go and make some improvements. So that's one thing. Another thing is what we have done, and over here in the screenshot, I wanted to show you that this build, which I am showing with these features, is a first release build for current channel, or if you will, it's called, the program is called Office Insiders. There are two channels within that, slow or fast, and I'm using the slow build over here to show you these features or screenshots. So if you have this build, and anybody can get that after signing up for Office Insider program, then you will be able to see these features. So if someone is on deferred channel, the general release build, then you might not see some of these features, and they'll be coming soon to that build as well. So what's the first thing which we have done is we have put two main menus in the backstage. So if you click on File on the top left-hand corner of Outlook, you get this backstage on the blue bar, which you see, and one of them is feedback. And there are some of the mechanisms, some of the ways over there for the users to provide feedback. This first one is the quick way to rate the product and provide some quick feedback, which we also look at. Then people always say, hey, I have run into an issue, I have a bug, what can I do? Calling support takes time and stuff. You can just tell them, hey, go report the issue over here in your own words, and we'll help you capture the screenshot and other details as well. These are some of the ways that when your users are approaching you for help, you can point them towards these and say that, hey, you can do this on your own. You can ask for help or get more information yourself so that it free ups your time to do more important tasks. Suggest a feature. A lot of the users always have some feature requests. Some are important in your eyes, some are not. But we also always want to collect all of that feedback so that we can prioritize and then work on them in the next product cycle. So you can click on this and get to the user voice site, which we have brought up for all Outlook versions, and put your feedback over there, or if your feedback is already listed over there, which was submitted by a user, then you can vote it up. One way that we use to communicate all of the new features or changes which are coming up in Outlook is our blog. So a link over to that blog post is also available in the backstage for feedback. Moving on, the second tab on the backstage is for support. So this is the place where you will come when you are actually running into an issue or not able to use Outlook, or an issue which is bothering you so much that you need help right away. And that's where we have embedded the new support and recovery assistant, or short Sarah, which we have built up in the last 1.5 year period. By clicking on this button, if you don't have Sarah client installed, it will point you towards the download website and you can install and use it. If it's already installed, clicking on the button will launch Sarah and you'll be able to use different scenarios to troubleshoot the issue and also recover from those issues. And we'll go through those details when I talk about Sarah. So here you go. So the very first thing which I wanted to ask is, how many of you already knew about Sarah, and this is not the first time that you're seeing Sarah? Okay? So a good number of you know, but I would love to have all of the hands raised. And most probably the reason is that when we were here at Ignite last year in Chicago, that was the point when we had released the first beta build of Sarah. And all through this year to this point, we have been building it up. So at that time, we only had some of the Outlook scenarios which you see over here. And since then, we have been building it up. So we have quite a few scenarios built up under Outlook for Outlook desktop client. And then you can see we have scenarios, support scenarios for Outlook for Mac, mobile devices, Outlook on the web. And just on the user demand, we built this office setup scenario. So what was happening is people were running Sarah and looking for help around Outlook setup or installation issues. And they were providing us feedback that, hey, I don't see my scenario over here. Outlook is not even installed for me, and I'm running into some installation-related issues. So looking at that feedback, we worked on that feedback and came up with this office setup scenario. So if you talk about Outlook, then your user, as a user, you are covered from setup, installation, to all the other issues which come up for Outlook. So for example, connectivity and all those issues. I'll show you all those scenarios in a second. This is the home website for Sarah to go and download and know or read more about the tool, diagnostics.outlook.com. It's a C2R application, click-to-run application. So as with all C2R applications, they update themselves when you launch them. It provides end-to-end diagnostics, and it has some of those intelligence or logic built into the client when you download it. And a whole lot of the diagnostics are available in cloud. So this client has the capability of going and connecting to the cloud and getting the latest logic around a problem or diagnostic, and then run that on your machine. So that's how we have implemented it. So you have heard a lot about Outlook mobile app. They have weekly release cycles. So we work on the similar mantra, and we have monthly dev sprints and weekly release cycles. So every week, we are updating these scenarios with more logic and recovery scenarios, and then every week we are fixing existing bugs or issues as well. It has telemetry built behind it, so we will know if a user uses in a particular country in Europe and runs into a specific issue, and our diagnostics say that there is an error this user is running into, but we don't have a solution for them. So we collect all of those that data, and then wherever that data takes us, we prioritize fixing those issues or having more logic or diagnostics built around those issues. So if you don't find an issue which directly relates to your problem, still go and try some of the diagnostics which is available around that scenario and have it report the error which you are seeing, because we are looking at the telemetry or data that we are collecting on the back end, and then we go and make improvements to address those issues which are currently not addressed in Sarah. So at this point, the list of seven scenarios that you see are there. Dynamic CRM Online is one scenario which was built by that team and was also onboarded on Sarah. Down at the bottom, you see Advanced Diagnostics. That's the section where we'll be putting some of the things which are admin-centric. So there is that OCPA tool, Office 365 Client Performance Analyzer tool, which we have put over there. How that helps is that if you are a tenant admin, if you're an administrator, and you want to find your users are reporting some of the client performance issues in Outlook, connectivity, slowness, folder update issues, mail notification issues, you can run that tool from over here under Sarah and get a report of, it paints a very easy view of what's going good for you or what may not be going good, and then provides instructions on how to address those issues. Most recently, in March or April timeframe, we also localized this and released this tool in 20 different languages. So it's available out there in many languages. The rating is around 58%, and then the average feedback is around 3.6 by 5. All of this is coming back from the users when they use Sarah, and at the end, provide feedbacks to us. Now I'm going to talk about one of the main scenario, which is for Outlook, because we are talking about Outlook 2016. And then for more details on other scenarios, there is a wiki which we have come up, and you can go over there and get that information. It's aka.ms/sarahwiki is the short link. So what we're, as you look in this screenshot, you're going to see all of these 7-8 scenarios that we have built so far in Sarah. Some of the scenarios which are done and complete at this point, as far as we are concerned, looking at the reported issues from that perspective, are listed over here. And then there are some which we introduce in beta stage. So you're going to see that moniker over there saying that this scenario is in beta stage and we are developing. For beta scenarios, what we do is we expose them to the public and we try to get more data for those scenarios, see what kind of issues our customers or users are having. So this scenario is around missing or deleted items and how they are going through the wizard and what kind of issues is SARA reporting, and then go and develop some of the solutions for those automated solutions within SARA. There are then other solutions, scenarios, for example, at the end, this new scenario which we introduced recently is other problems. So you're gonna find over here there are some very specific scenarios. Outlook failed to start, connectivity issues, I cannot configure my account. Those are very well-defined issues. But then users are also reporting issues in search, a feature-specific issue. Or my calendar view is corrupted, or the way I wanted, it's not like that. Outlook was working fine this morning, but not working at this moment. So stuff like that, which is not very clear. And we wanna get more details from those users. So this other problems walk you through a wizard, which essentially presents very basic questions, just two or three at most, and ask user for some feedback around those issues. Are you having a search problem? Were you having this before or not? Describe that problem in one line or something. And then we collect an ETL log or an Outlook log by enabling that. So we ask the user for that permission and we get the log. That is our way of collecting some underground information so that we can look at that log and see what's going on. Now imagine if there is a search issue going on, an emerging search issue, and 300 of users in a certain demographic go and run SARA, and they're clicking on search scenario and uploading a log around that search issue. It's easier for us on the back end looking at all of those logs to see what's the trend, and that's what we are getting at, right? So even if we don't know about an issue and it's emerging, those logs are gonna be helpful to us to provide, to point towards or paint that trend information that what's going on. There is one module where we are erroring out or what is exactly going on. So that's why we ask users to upload the logs. On the left-hand side of the slide, there are some tests which I have written over there. So these are some of the tests which we run when you choose many of these or any of these Outlook scenarios. So we run tests around tenant and user account validation. If the account is valid, user's account is not disabled or anything, user license validation, password validation, temporary or permanent passwords makes a difference in how you're connecting. Enabled protocols, MAPI is the one which is required by Outlook. Ports validation, the communication through this port should be available from client to the service. Auto discover, SSL certification, and all the other tests. And these tests are being run by SARA client from the user's client machine going up to cloud. So that's one way we see what's going on. And then we also run some tests from cloud to cloud. So we have some points established in the cloud and we check the availability of our service from those checkpoints in cloud as well. So if Outlook service or the mailbox is not accessible from user machine, we wanna see if it's accessible from other locations or not, and then corroborate those test results and come up with some of the suggestions for the user. So tests are not only being run from client machine, rather from cloud as well. This tool is user and user centric, and we wanted to have something very simple and easy for an end user to use. So the tenant admin, when you get a problem that, hey, I'm having an Outlook connectivity issue, you just point the user to that hey, go into the support tab and click on that tool and just run, go through it. So that user should be able to go through the tool, and that's why you're not gonna see a lot of details over here, what actually is going wrong. And we provide those details in very easy to understand language. But as a tenant admin, if you are helping them out and you wanna get more detailed information around all the tests that we have run, we store SARA logs on the same machine and you'll be able to get that log as well. There is a link on the top right-hand corner for results, so you click on that and the log opens. It's an XML log file, easily readable in any XML reader or just in Notepad, and you can go through that to figure out what's going on if you're interested. So yeah, we present some of the results, and then we also present. So the unique thing about Sarah is that there have been a lot of tools available from Microsoft and other third-party sites and developers to diagnose the problem, and then they point you towards some of the available content on how to fix the issue yourself. Here are the instructions. Go through it and fix it. What we have tried to do in Sarah is also try to automate those steps for you so that as an end user, you can just click on a button and say, go ahead, fix it for me. So we do that. Sarah does that and then presents a summary at the end. In some cases where we are not able to resolve the issue, we will redirect the user to the administrator because administrator is in the position of opening a support case and give them proper directions over here on how to do that. As you see in the end, there is a link to troubleshooting trace logs is also available over here. One thing which I would say that this is a screen which points to administrator, and then the workflow would be that administrator will be calling into support to create a support case. All the logs are available to you on that machine, plus because of Sarah being connected to the service, we have also uploaded those logs to service, so a support engineer who will be working with you will be able to access those logs just using the user's email address. So you don't need to provide them with the logs. So that's how we facilitate the troubleshooting or next steps as well, if you need to go through that. Okay, so this was a brief description of how the different support scenarios which we have built in Sarah, they work. And now I wanted to bring attention to some of the features which we have built after seeing what kind of issues our customers are going into, which were mostly related to service, not Outlook. So some of the times you run into issues, connectivity issues, where Outlook is not at fault, service is down. And I don't know how many of you have gone through those service issues, but going through that service issue initially at the beginning and until the point that when Microsoft recognizes it as a service issue and lists it on the service health dashboard, it's a struggle. It could be hours that the issue gets recognized because it needs to be investigated and all that stuff. So what we did is we looked at all of those issues and we figured out what are the key failure points for Outlook in the service, on the service side. So the very first thing which Outlook does is Outlook tries to connect, and then the very first thing which you have to do is provide credentials to connect, to be able to authenticate and connect. So there could be things which can go wrong on the identity side or the authentication service, which is run by the Windows folks. And they are keeping logs of all of those issues. And when something wrong happens with authentication, they do send some errors back to the client. But Outlook may not be representing those errors in proper error messages. And you might see some of these error messages that, hey, server is not available. We are working to update these error messages as well. But in the meantime, we wanted to handle that in Outlook. Yeah, I mean, look at these error messages. Some of them still say Exchange Server, right? So we definitely want to change them because there is nothing like Exchange Server. It's Office 365 Exchange Online. Anyway, so seeing these error messages and the related error codes on the Windows side, we came up with a list of error codes from that. Then we moved on to the second point, which was when you get authenticated successfully, and if there's nothing wrong with that, then you go to the AutoDiscover service, because you need to have the server settings down at Outlook so that Outlook can go and connect to those servers, the CAS and the mailbox server. And something might go wrong over there as well with AutoDiscover service. And they are keeping a log of all of that stuff and providing those errors back to Outlook, and Outlook might still be displaying one of these error messages, which are very generic in nature. So we look at that second point. The third point, that if everything works great in AutoDiscover service, you might still run into some problem connecting to the CAS or mailbox server. And they're also keeping a log of that and might be providing. So these are the three points which we looked at, and we prioritized our work looking at where are most of the failures. Let's start from that point. And we saw that a lot of the times Outlook runs into AutoDiscover service-related issues, and it's not very obvious to the users, and we can provide some insights or help them in monitoring that issue. In the newer versions of Outlook, at the bottom of the status bar, we just go from connected to disconnected state. And that's very hard for a user to realize, because when you look at the overall UI or UX of Outlook, this message is at the bottom. And if you really don't know that's where to look, you are kind of confused. What's going on? Outlook is launched, but I'm not getting my new email, or my new email is not getting out. So we looked at that. And so here are some of the ways that customers report this issue, right? I mean, look at this forum post. He's talking about this issue, connectivity issue, and he is pasting that error message, which means nothing to him, which is not helpful in trying to get to the root cause or try to resolve the issue. Another person is reporting that, hey, I'm having intermittent connectivity issues. So this is a really interesting one. A lot of customers call us and say that, hey, in the morning when I was here, Outlook was working fine. Afternoon, wasn't working. It happened again after a couple of hours. And when it was broken, I called you. And by the time I got you in the next 15, 20 minutes, it's now connected again. But I bet it is going to be in the disconnected state within the next hour or so. What should I do? And the engineers are at loss that, hey, it's working right now. What? Let's wait until it breaks, and then I'll work with you. And at that point, the conversation is not that comfortable, right? Engineer tries to, wants to help, but Outlook is working. There is nothing broken. And the customer is like, hey, it's going to break within the next hour, I'm sure, because that's been happening all day. So these are the situations which we wanted to help with. So what we did is, if you go under Outlook and run that related scenario, which says Outlook is saying connected or disconnected at the status bar, for this scenario, at the background, when we looked at the, as I mentioned earlier, AutoDiscover service, there were some errors which AutoDiscover service was logging. We got a list of all of those errors which were happening most frequently. And as a result of those errors, at some point later on, were being regarded as a service health dashboard incident or service incident. So here are those errors, and they mean something. So we got a list of those errors, and we built a scenario on top of that for Sarah. So now if using Outlook, you are running into one of these errors, and run Sarah to find out, diagnose the problem, what's going on, because Outlook is going to give you those generic errors, then we will determine if you are running into these errors, and we will display this particular screen in Outlook. That, hey, it seems like there is a problem going on with service. In the list of errors, there were many errors, and then there was 401. So this screen comes up for all errors except 401, because 401 is mainly authentication or password related. We show a different screen for 401 error, which is this, which talks about that, hey, we are having trouble logging you in. Seems like it's a password issue. The password issue over here is around, for example, if your password were temporary or it expired and you changed it, there might be some time period, 5, 10, 15, depending on the star alignment, that your new password might not work. And service will say that, hey, your password is incorrect. It's just taking time to make sure that all passwords are in sync and stuff. So for that, this particular screen is shown. And you can, we mentioned over here that, hey, just wait for a few minutes, and the issue will be resolved. Now, over here, we give the customer a chance that, hey, we have determined that you are running into a service issue because we are seeing that particular error, one of those errors which we had that on the list on the previous slide. So what we can do over here is we can help monitor this issue for you. So think about running into this issue without having Sarah. You don't know nothing. You don't have any verification that you are running into a service issue unless you call a support engineer, and he goes and runs some checks in the background and comes back and tells you that, yeah, it seems like you are running into a service issue. And even then, that could be a 100% confirmation that, yeah, you are definitely running into it, or you might be running into it. And then you have to wait for that incident to be classified as a service incident and get listed, right? All of that struggle, all of that drill. So we wanted to save you from that. And for example, tomorrow if your end user says that I am running into intermittent connectivity issue and I see this disconnected connected stuff, you can ask them to run Sarah. And if it determines that it is running into an issue, it will give them an opportunity to monitor the issue. Now from here, the scenario starts, which tries to help the customer. And this, when it because the end user says that, yeah, go ahead, monitor this for me. Now, at this point, you don't need to keep restarting Outlook or restarting machine, all of those various things which customers and end users do that, hey, I want to connect Outlook, make Outlook work, because you don't know what's going on in the background. So you don't need to do all of that. You don't need to be frustrated. Rather, just have Sarah monitor that issue for you, and it will keep pinging the service. So we run, we check for the service availability every 2 to 3 minutes for the next 30 minutes. So that's the bigger time period that we have set for monitoring. And all of this is configurable, so configurable within Sarah. So for instance, if we see that in Europe, Paris, in a certain location, there are a lot of users who are running into this particular service outage issue, and we determine that there is something going on, we will start working in the background with the Auto Discover service folks to see what's going on, and they can bring the service back up. But then we have also the option to change some test parameters over here to help provide early detection or route them towards one solution if a solution is available and stuff like that. So all of this is configurable. If within the next 30 minutes of monitoring the service does not come up, we'll say that, hey, it seems like it still is down. And then we will again route the user towards the administrator so that a support case needs to be created, and that part can, the admin can proceed with that part. But if after running those checks within the next 30 minutes at any time, service comes back as positive, then we deliver that message to the end user. So for the next 30 minutes, we'll keep doing it. And what we have seen through the run of this scenario, that most of the time we are seeing Sarah delivering the good news to the customer. The reason? A lot of the time when we had earlier analyzed the service issues on those 3 points, we determined that a lot of the issues are intermittent connectivity issues. Yes, at some point service goes down at those 3 points, but it then comes back up and is available. And if you leave it just on the user, he'll have to keep restarting Outlook and wait and be frustrated about that. But if you put this scenario in Sarah, we can help them out and make sure that they are not frustrated. Anyway, so after 5 consecutive attempts or tests, if we see that, yes, service is still available, we bring up this good message and let the user know that it's fixed. And then we go into the general feedback loop that where we're asking, hey, did we fix your problem? And how good was it? In the end, I wanted to show this slide that whenever you go through any scenario in Sarah, and whether it resolves their issue or not, we always ask for some feedback and ask your users to provide honest feedback over there. We look at this feedback, prioritize it. This feedback also helps us in learning about what our users really wanted to do when they chose a specific scenario. So when you provide feedback, it's really helpful. So Tool has the feedback mechanism built in. You can also send feedback directly to us. So if you want to talk more about what kind of tests we are running, if you are interested in more technical details, come talk to me after the session. I can provide my email address, and we can start that conversation. In the coming months, I want to build up knowledge of tenant admins about this tool, because I understand there are a lot of tenant admins who have background of on-prem support. They have a lot of good technical knowledge, and they want to know what actually is going on in the background. So totally up for that. Approach me, and I can provide my email address, and we can have that conversation. And I plan to, as I mentioned earlier, there will be a wiki where a lot of these details will be available, so we'll keep building on that knowledge. Okay, so this ends the Sarah session. We will have the QA thing at the end, and if you have any questions, we'll be here. And now Gabe is gonna go through some of the features.
Yeah, I'll do some demos here. Mm-hmm. Can you switch me over to 8? I don't think I need that. All right, so there are a couple new features that we've invested in Sarah and Outlook. First thing I want to do is just bring Sarah over. This is what it looks like if you haven't run it before. As you can see, these are all the different, major scenarios that Outlook that Amir was going through earlier. The first one I'm going to do though is the first feature that I want to show you is a new feature called Direct Connect that's been invested into Outlook directly. What this enables is if you've gone and you've verified your domain in the service, but for any reason DNS is still incorrect, Outlook has added a new endpoint so that it will be able to connect. In fact, let me go ahead and start this. And when you go through, normally when you go into Sarah for the first time, it's going to ask you to sign in. You'll sign in with the O365 account that you want to test with. And I've already done that to save a little time. And now Sarah's, this is one of the scenarios. There's a bunch in here. There's, you know, I'm getting prompted for authentication. I'm setting up a new profile. I'm running into problems. I'm already connected to Outlook, but I'm getting errors where I'm disconnected or trying to connect scenarios. Just find the right scenario that you know matches what you're working through. In this case, I know my DNS is wrong, and I can show you that because I can bring it over here while it's running that. You can see my domain, GabrielBratton.com. I intentionally went and set my auto-discover record incorrectly because I wanted to be able to show you that Outlook is going to be able to still be able to work and connect to the service, even though my DNS record is incorrect. So it's in the last steps here. You'll see it went through a lot of steps. It's checking network connectivity, credentials. You know, it's checking a lot of local things. My ports were open. Auto-discover is working properly. All the things that it takes to be able to have Outlook make connection to the service. And the other thing to let you know is, as we add these new features like Direct Connect, then you're probably going to also ask, well, is it possible to disable this because, you know, maybe I get into some circumstance where, you know, I'm in a configuration where this new feature, you know, works great for everybody else, but maybe causes authentication prompts. I've seen in some hybrid scenarios where this feature can cause authentication prompts. It's not very many cases, but we do have the ability to, let me find the KB article I pulled up a minute ago. This is the KB article, if I can pull this over here. So we have the KB article where we document all of our endpoints for Outlook Auto-Discover. These are all the places it looks for Auto-Discover settings. As you'll see down here, we've added the new Direct Connect. And then the Direct Connect endpoint is documented down here. So you could set exclude explicit O365 endpoint if for any reason you ever needed to ask Outlook not to use that particular endpoint. So it's still running through its scenario. In the meantime, I'm going to go ahead and bring up the control panel. I'm having to drag things over there, so I apologize. This takes a second. All right. And, you know, Sarah's going to take a few seconds. She's doing a lot of checks. It's going to report back here. Oh, there it goes. So as I showed you on the website, on GoDaddy website a minute ago, my DNS settings were incorrect. And you'll see Sarah correctly found that, and it's also telling me what I need to go see. It calls out very specifically, right here, my auto-discover record was incorrect on GoDaddy. So it tells me what I need to go fix. So using Direct Connect, I'm still going to go ahead and let me create a new profile. Have a look on the screen over here. Oh, let's switch back over here. Add. Bring that over here. Whoops. All right, I'm going to have it create a new profile. And when it does this, I'm actually going to demonstrate yet another feature that we've done. Now, in that first feature of DNS, believe it or not, we get about 500 cases a month. Where the customer calls in, I'm getting different problems, authentication prompts or other issues, and the problem was that DNS was incorrect. So this is one we invested in this particular feature, which is going to enable me to go ahead and create the profile. The second feature that I was going to introduce you to and for you to become aware of is simplified account creation. And so this is a sort of our new clean UI for your users whenever you have them set up for the first time to connect to the service. What will happen is the user will log in to the portal, portal.office.com. When they install Office, they'll be prompted at the end to sign in to the service. Well, once they're signed in, we now know your credentials or the user's credentials. So you'll see this new dialog. It just has the connect button. So the user can just click connect and have to, rather than having to go through the old, potentially you can go through six or eight dialogues, depending how far, you get in setting up and configuring Outlook the first time. This is a one-click experience to be able to just click connect to go ahead and configure the account. I do want to point out, because you know you need to know this too, maybe this dialog isn't appropriate. Maybe you want to set up a different account and not the account that was signed into Office originally. So you can go down here and click connect to a different account, and that will allow you, that'll bring up the old style dialog that we're used to, but I'll go ahead and click connect. And then it's going to show you connecting, and then it'll go ahead and configure the profile. And for this particular dialog as well, we know that in some circumstances, you know, you might be in a state where, all right, came back over here somewhere. All right, where's my mouse? All right, came back over here. All right, sorry, it's working on two different machines at the same time. So it's going to launch the profile. What I was talking about there is in the simplified account creation. Also, you could be in a circumstance where, you know, the mailbox is still on premise, but you're using some service features like, you know, Skype or SharePoint. So in that case, let me show you, we have a way to also disable that particular feature. And this is something that we actually have had some cases on. Because, you know, not everybody has everything in the cloud yet. So we published this registry, this policy registry key, so that you can go and set it to disable it, and it just brings you back to the old dialogues, the old add account dialog here. So just become aware of that. And bring that back over here, and let me get Outlook to come up. Direct Connect profile. So that's the new profile that I created using the bad DNS settings. And Outlook was able to just go ahead and configure it properly. Pop back over here. And so that is that new feature. There's another feature I was going to show you. Third feature that we've recently built in is, so we think of the things that cause the top support call volume. First was DNS. Second was, how do I set up a profile in Outlook? That's why we invented, built the new simplified account creation to keep the user from getting lost in the dialogues and not knowing what to enter. When you look at our top issues on all the way down, the next big thing is, I deleted an item and I can't find it. So I don't really have anything as profile yet, but I do have some stuff in here. All right. Is this new feature, like if you're in your inbox, let me get over here. All right. So I'm in the profile, but if I deleted something and I can't find it and now I want to recover it back, we've added this recover items recently, removed from this folder. So it's an easier way to get to your recoverable items folder for things that you had deleted. Believe it or not, we had added this feature up here in the top left where when you click on the deleted items folder, we add the recovered deleted items from server button. And most customers, for whatever reason, they still didn't see that big button there. So now we've added this blue bar, kind of like OWA has, where you can just click, like I said before, to bring up the recoverable items folder to recover items from that particular folder. And those were the main features. I'll go back to some of the things that Amir was talking about. If you haven't really paid attention, we've added some things in the backstage of Outlook. There's a new feedback tab. And what's back here, and I'm running a latest dev build here, but the main thing I want to point out is you can quickly get to the ability to suggest a feature. This goes to OutlookUserVoice.com. Come over here. So it takes us to User Voice, and you can come and submit new features and vote on them. the Alley team is, you know, this is really a way that they're going to go about going forward, looking for what things we need to invest in next, and they're going to prioritize it based on this list. They would like to see a lot more volume, though, before they really commit to building off of this. So just please keep adding your feedback here, and it will eventually get to be an actionable thing for the product team. The other thing you'll see back here is rate your Microsoft Outlook experience. So the Outlook product team is paying attention to what they call a net promoter score. You know, it's understanding, you know, what are the things that, you know, people are satisfied with and what are they dissatisfied with, and, you know, being able to react on that feedback. So this is their way to get a net promoter score directly in the product. So, you know, as you're using the product, if you think of things that, you know, you would like to see us improve or you want to give us good feedback on, then come and use this particular feature in the feedback tab. The other tab that was added, you know, Amir talked a lot about Sarah, is a direct download to Sarah. So you can come in here, and this link will directly download Sarah onto the user's machine and install it. So Julie is not here yet, so I can give maybe demo some other features. Another, I'll bring it back over here. Oh, Julie's here. Come on up, Julie. While Julie's working on coming up here, I'm going to show you. There's this new feature called at mentions, where when you type the at symbol, you can call somebody out. And when you do that, it adds them into the email and puts them on the to line. And you'll see it's highlighted so that it's visible. So when the user receives the email, they know they've been called out, action item in that email. I'd show a lot more, but Julie's about to talk about some important stuff. So.
Can y'all hear me? Okay. I was just recognizing a lot of faces. We were going to talk about the new calendar sharing model. How many of y'all have not yet seen it? Okay, then we'll talk about it. Okay. Sounds good.
I need, Amir, which was it on? This one. Was it four?
Five, I think.
It looks like my screen came back up.
Yeah, this is it, right? The PowerPoint deck?
Yeah, this is okay. Deck. Okay. Yeah, yeah, you're set.
Okay, I think Gabe demoed most of these. Okay, hi everyone, my name is Julia Foran. I'm a PM on Outlook Calendar. The reason the product team is here at a support session is because what we really want to say is that product and support are starting to work together. Even though we're two separate orgs, Gabe and Amir actually created a deck that the product team used for our vision for new calendar sharing. So this was an example of what we can do when support gives us the top pain points and then product executes on it. And this is a new model that we actually want to take more of. Instead of us just building features that are fun and exciting, sometimes we need to stop and take a moment to fix what's broken. So we're going to talk about calendar sharing today and really how we've been fixing calendar sharing for our users. I'm going to talk about three key improvements that we've made to Calendar. The first one is shared calendars. And when I say shared calendars, I'm talking about person-to-person sharing, like editing and viewing, as well as delegation of calendar sharing. The second thing is faster free busy. We know that this is a huge pain point for users, especially when they get those hash marks and then they re-query and it's fine and they don't understand why. So I'll tell you some major improvements we've been making to make faster free busy. And the last one is democratic meeting information. So what this means is that attendees are going to have the same information on the attendee list as the organizer. So you'll be able to see other people's accept, tentative, decline, who's been forwarded the meeting, that kind of stuff. So we'll talk about that as well. So I'll start with shared calendars, which is one of my favorite topics at Ignite. The first one is normal shared calendars. I just want to reiterate because this is a question that we get all the time. Shared calendars for us means normal sharing as well as delegated sharing. So for the whole presentation, I'll say shared calendar, but what I really mean is both of these. So users are going to see shared calendar improvements in three different ways. The first one is that they're going to sync to all of their devices. So today, you know, if a calendar is shared to you or you're a delegate, you don't get those shared calendars on your mobile device. You're going to get them on Outlook Mobile, Outlook on Windows 10, iOS calendar, wherever you're viewing your calendar, you're going to have all of your calendars. The second thing is improved syncing and reliability. So what that really means for users is that they're going to get the changes on their shared calendars just as fast as they get changes on their normal calendars. It's going to be instantaneous for everyone just as fast because we're pushing the changes out, and we'll talk more exactly about how it's done. And improved reliability. Outlook desktop, Outlook on Windows is making huge changes to how they edit calendars. They're going to start making edits to shared calendars via REST APIs, so this will be replayable actions. So we in the service know exactly what Outlook on Windows is trying to edit, what Outlook on Mac is trying to edit. All of this will be the same API, so we in the service can do the right thing and make sure that that case where you have that delegate who accepted a meeting and it never got on the principal's calendar or something like that happens, we've all been there. Trust me, I get calls about this too. That doesn't happen in the new model because we in the service we have a logic layer that's taking care of all this when the clients are editing via modern APIs. The third thing users are going to see is simpler and consistent UI everywhere. So I'll show some UI today on Outlook Windows, and I'll show some of the new UI. The main thing is that users are going to have the same set of simplified permissions on all the clients. Entry points are going to be consistent. There's going to feel like one Outlook across all the clients. So I want to talk a little bit about the architecture of how shared calendars work today so you can understand what the new model and how that works and think about that for your users. So today when an owner shares to a sharee, what gets created in that sharee mailbox is a linked calendar entry. That calendar entry only means something to Outlook on Windows, Outlook on Mac, and Outlook on Web. That's why you don't get your shared calendars on any other client, because no one else understands the special entry in the sharee's mailbox. So sharees now have two types of quote calendars in their mailbox. They have their own calendars, and they also have this linked calendar entry that's really just a pointer back to the owner's mailbox. And it's not even a true pointer because it still has to go through auto-discover, it still has to do a lot of things, causes huge reliability issues we know for users today. So when you're on a client like Windows, Mac, or Web, what they do is they actually have two connections open, or however many shared calendars you have, especially for those power delegates, they have multiple connections open, one to their own mailbox, and then remote connections to all the owner's mailboxes. So when you're syncing your own calendar, everything's great. It syncs to that local cache, and then it goes up to the service, and everything's fine. When you're syncing on that remote calendar, you're making remote reads and remote writes, which causes Outlook to hang, especially if you're on a slow network. If anything fails with that, if the mailbox is in migration or being moved or anything's happening to it, everything's going to go wrong and fail. And it's always that most important meeting where that happens. So that's how reads and writes work today. And then on your mobile devices, what's happening is that they don't understand that linked calendar entry, and they just see their own local folders. So the new model of calendar sharing. When an owner shares to the sharee, two things are going to happen in the new model. First is we're going to create a local folder for that shared calendar in the sharee's mailbox. It's going to look, feel, smell just like their own calendars. And then we're also going to create that linked calendar entry for all those legacy clients to not break 2010, 2013, Mac 2011 that understand linked calendar entries. So now when you're syncing, regardless of client, these clients are going to start syncing all of their calendars. There's only going to be one type of calendar that your mail application or your calendar applications understand, and that's your own calendars. They're not going to read the linked calendar entry. One question we get is, wait, you have two copies of the same calendar in there. What happens if I'm on 2016 and it's starting to read that? Does it still show the linked calendar entry? We've done a ton of special logic in the server so that whatever client you're on, you only see one copy of that shared calendar. So you'll never see two copies of the same shared calendar. You'll either be syncing and editing on the new local folder, or you'll be syncing and editing on the linked calendar entry. So what happens when you write? Are you editing locally? How does that get up to the owner's mailbox? What about the other people who have access to the calendar? What happens is we built a little protection layer in the service that sees that a write has happened to this calendar and that this write is for a calendar you don't own. And we intercept that write and we redirect it to the owner's calendar. And then at the same time we see it in the owner's calendar, instantly we sync it out to all of the other cloud mailboxes, all the other sharing mailboxes. And so changes are being pushed out to everyone's mailbox. So you get it synced to you instantly and sunk down without having to go query for what has changed. And then you as the sharee continue to sync and just like you normally do. You never have to wait for new changes or conflicts or anything like that. So I just want to recap kind of show some UI as well that kind of points out the new simplifications we've made. This is the web UI. Web's going to come out in Q4 of this year. We're going to make a big announcement. It's going to be the first one with the new UI and the ability to share on the new model and accept on the new model. And then the other clients will come soon, and we'll talk about timeline in just a few slides. The first one is we've combined share permissions, sharing out and receiving, who you've shared to and the process of sharing out, mostly because we heard a lot of user feedback that they would share and then not see that physical confirmation that the person has been added. The second major thing is we allow you to manage delegates now in Outlook on the web. You can set delegate permissions for private events or where notifications go. The default users now in Outlook on the web. The default user is the reason why Gabe, when he tries to schedule a meeting with me, why he can view my free busy and scheduling assistant even though I've never explicitly shared my calendar to him. That's basically the default permissions everyone in your org has. And now we allow you to manage that in the web. The other important thing we've done there is remove the ability to delete the default user. A lot of people would call into support with like, hey, I want the other people to be able to schedule meetings with me. Why can't they? Because they had deleted the default user and there's no way to add it back. So now we don't allow you to do that anymore. And the last thing is we kind of break out internal and external sharing. A lot of IT pros like yourself all said, I really want my users to know when they're going outside of our org. And now we kind of split that out for you. I want to show the old UI on desktop Outlook here, or Outlook on Windows. It's a lot of options, and if you're a user just wanting to grant edit permissions to someone else or view permissions to someone else, it is overwhelming options for you. So what we've done is we've simplified that down to a few radio buttons that just is the same set of permissions you're going to see on Outlook on the web you see here. We give you three levels of view permissions, free busy, limited details, and full details, and we give you edit. I do want to point out, though, that I don't know if my laser pointer works, but right below that blue bar there, you can see manage delegates. So for reasons, because Outlook on Windows allows you to delegate more than just your calendar, we need to keep delegate UI in its own place and separate from this calendar sharing UI. But previously, there was no connection between the calendar sharing UI and your delegate UI, and a lot of people don't see those the same thing. They really are the same thing. You're sharing your calendar. So we added a little pointer to say, when you click Manage Delegates, we'll pull up the full Delegates UI and allow you to set delegates from there. And then you can see on the right here, this is Outlook on the web. So those same set of permissions, with the exception of Delegate, is going to be the same in all of your clients. And this is going to be on web, on Windows, and on Mac. So you'll have the same consistent experience. Two other things we're changing on Windows and Mac is that on Windows, you had 5 options to choose from if you wanted to share your calendar. And we, in a lot of our user studies, everyone would pick a different one. It was like pretty evenly distributed. And when we looked at telemetry clicks, it was also equally distributed, but we assume everyone was actually trying to accomplish the same thing. So we're putting it down in one ribbon button. So when you say share calendar, you see that UI that we showed on the previous screen. And in the context menu as well, you now just have one entry option. You're not going to have another flyout of 5 more options to pick from. Also, accepting on mobile. Previously, when you got a sharing invite on mobile, you had to go to mobile on the web. Why can't it just be as easy as accepting a meeting invite? That was kind of the mantra that we told ourselves over and over here. So now you have a native accept button, whether you're on Outlook on Windows 10 or Outlook on iOS or Android, where you can just quickly accept the sharing invitation right from the mobile phone and get your calendar syncing instantly there on the mobile phone. So just to kind of summarize, instant syncing. We do that because we intercept that write in the service, and we fan it out to everyone. We push it out. This is the main reason that this is going to be only for cloud users, because especially that logic layer in the service, we have to own it. We have to know where all the mailboxes are to push those changes out. The second one is that we handle conflicts. When that delegate adds a description and the other delegate adds a description and they overwrite each other, that's not going to happen anymore, because the clients are going to be replaying the changes to us back in the service, and we can do the right thing to merge them or do them in the right order. And the last one is simpler syncing. Clients don't need to understand multiple calendar folders. So the less easier for user, you have the same set of simple permissions. the service. We're handling the emails and invites, so the text is going to be clear. It's going to be consistent no matter whether you share from Mac or share from Windows or share from the web. And then allows us to say, hey, this is your calendar, and you should be able to do whatever you want with your calendar. So now you can set reminders on a shared calendar. You can view your shared calendars offline. You can get notified when things are changed on that calendar. Because when we do that fan out, if you choose to be notified, we know that we're making a change to your calendar. And we can send you an email notification if you want to kind of listen onto a calendar, if it's the Team OOF calendar or something like that. So timelines, we are going to be pushing out normal shared calendars, so not delegated quite yet. We're going to start with normal in Q4, and we'll have the new UI in web for share out and accept, and on Windows 10 you'll be able to accept. So what this means is it's really important that both the person sharing their calendar and accepting their calendar are doing so from a modern client. So when you see this blog post on blogs.office.com/outlook, you need people to remove their existing relationships, share and accept from the web if they want to be getting it on their mobile devices. Then we'll be doing share and accept from Windows and Mac in Q1 of next year, and also delegated calendars will come then too. And then accept from mobile iOS and Android will be coming in Q2. So I just want to repeat really quickly that if you want to be on the new model, you have to share and accept, and both sides of the relationship have to be in Office 365. So I'm going to go through some FAQs that we get. I would love to take questions afterwards. I'll be around for a while after this as well. Existing relationships. You have a lot of users that would want this feature, but you didn't really want to share their calendar again. We know that. So starting early next year, we'll start upgrading existing relationships with no action from users. So on their side, nothing changes besides they just start to see their shared calendars everywhere else, and they start to get more reliable, faster syncing, all of that, but no action required from any users. The other question we get is, does it also apply to shared mailboxes? Because this is sharing, right, for your calendar. What happens to sharing for mail and sharing for contacts? This is calendar specific at this time. Ignite is a place where y'all tell us exactly what you want to see in our Outlook clients. And also, we listen a lot to what support says, especially when it comes to sharing. So we prototype this with calendars. It's been a really successful model, and we're working with the mail and contacts team to make them aware of the infrastructure that we've built to do this and allow them to do the same thing for shared mailboxes and for shared contact lists. So this is something that we're aware of and we're trying to work on right now. The other top two requests we get all the time is free busy. So we have done major optimizations in the cloud to say, there's 50 people that most of your meetings happen with, and with those 50 people, your free busy is going to come back in milliseconds. And when we looked at the data today for the 95th percentile, I'm a little embarrassed to say it was 6 seconds. So people, you know, have time to kind of like take 5 sips of coffee, maybe, I don't know. But 6 seconds is a long time. When we look at the 95th percentile within Microsoft today, it's down to 200 milliseconds. So it's incredibly fast for those 50 people that we have a hit for. The other thing is attendee information. So if I'm an attendee of a meeting, I don't know who else is attending. So everyone's been in that position where the organizer is on vacation and you're trying to decide, is this meeting going to happen today? Who's showing up? You're like sitting around in a conference room. That's not going to happen anymore because you as an attendee will be able to see who's RSVP'd. And also everyone who's been forwarded the meeting will show up in your attendee list. And this is across every Outlook client. Outlook on Windows, Mac, you can see that tracking tab on every single Outlook client. This is rolling out worldwide now. So starting from meetings that are created once you've been on the flight, you'll start to see this information fanning out for them as well. And the important thing for this is that the organizer has to be in Office 365, and you have to be in Office 365, but not all the other attendees have to be in Office 365. So if someone on-prem accepts the meeting invite and it goes to this organizer who's in the cloud with you, we can fan out those changes within the cloud, but only within the cloud. All right, so that's it for calendar. We'd love to take some Q&A now.
There's some mics up here if y'all can go to those, it'd help a lot. It's a little hard to hear.
All right, I'll just yell.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
You addressed a lot of pain points with sharing. Sarah looks good, by the way, but no questions there. But one major pain point as an administrator that I keep having. Organizer sends out a ton of meetings. They book like the next 6 months of their lives. They leave the company, and the organizer is a read-only field on every calendar invite they've sent.
Yes, okay.
Any way to give an admin a way to say, this guy took that guy's job, so now he's the organizer? You know, that'd be so nice, so simple. Yeah.
We heard this, so we have a program called Compass Program for Exchange or Office 365 users. Yeah. They're on earlier builds than the rest of the world, the public for this. This was something we just talked about in April with them. Mm-hmm. There was three things that we talked about with them. One is the ability to transfer a meeting. That's one.
Yes.
The second one is to co-organize a meeting. Hey, you and this mm-hmm. colleague, you know, even when they're on vacation, you want to be able to edit the meeting, or maybe that everyone can edit, especially a one-on-one, right? Like, both people should be able to change that meeting. So transferring, co-organizing, and the third thing that they said is when someone leaves the company, all of their meetings are still booked on those conference rooms, and can you please just free up the conference rooms? Yes, we heard. Those are the three things they told us. I have a few action items for y'all to make this possible. One, please go vote this on outlook.uservoice.com. That's the best way for me to take it to my engineering team, to my leadership team, to invest in this, to say, you know, every day I was pointing at Outlook on iOS, their user voice gets tons of feedback and say, shared calendars, number two, shared calendars, number two, you know, like, this is how we can do that. Secondly, we are prototyping this and working on it. One step towards doing co-organizing was that all clients get on modern APIs, because we need to know that this was the co-organizer who made the edit, not the organizer. So that was one thing. And then the third thing is transfer of ownership. We're working on a way to do that when someone leaves. When someone leaves the company, it's way easier for us to do transfer meetings and free up conference rooms. That's yes. That's going to come sooner than co-organizing, but those are things we are prototyping and working
okay.
on.
Okay, thank you. That'll be huge.
Thank you. And please vote it in user voice. Like, this is the power tool that we can go to the teams with. So thank you.
Also, we got a couple 1 gigabyte USB drives with Tony Redmond's Office 365 book on it. So.
Okay.
Go ahead. Can you?
It's a 1 gigabyte. So.
Can you explain a little more about the fast, free, busy lookup and how that stays current with the actual calendar it's looking up against?
Yes. Yeah, so I'll start with how the 50 list is created. We have the people graph in Office 365, so we know the 20 people you communicate with most often, whether it's mail or meetings. So that's 20 of the 50 is people that you have sent out mail with. And then the other 30 people that you can query most frequently is people who schedule with you. So especially those senior people who just get meetings scheduled with them, the people querying their calendars will get it fast. So 30% of your fast, free, busy is who schedules or who you schedule with most often, and 20% is who you communicate with most often, or 20 is who you communicate with most often. The way we do it is very proprietary and not something I can talk about inside here or really externally, but it is optimized lookups in the cloud is how you can think of it. We update it as soon as something changes. So if you're someone that would be in my 50 list, then when you make a change to your calendar, we're updating that optimization to happen instantly. The other thing that we do is that if you have shared with me more details, then when my fast lookup is the details as well. So it's not just free busy we're optimizing for, but it's the level of detail that you have as well. But it is also within the cloud only, so it's only the 50 people you communicate with in the cloud. Yeah, sure.
There we go.
Hey, regarding the Sarah tool, our UPN suffix is different than our primary SMTP address, and we don't have our UPN suffix doesn't have AutoDiscover records attached to it, and so whenever we try to run the tool, it just fails. Is there going to be something where that changes in the future?
So we have heard that feedback. Yes, there is a bug internally logged on that. If you can, have you provided feedback? I just wanted to know your organization address and stuff, some specific details, so that I can look up your run or your log, okay. Like I mentioned. That'll help me make sure that, yes, we are addressing your scenario. So I'll come talk to you a little bit after offline, and then we'll get their detail.
And okay? Then one more. I see that it has Outlook for Mac, but then whenever you try to run it for a Mac, it only downloads an EXE.
So Outlook for Mac scenario is actually done for the tenant admins like you who said that I have Outlook from Mac users. They are reporting connectivity issues, but I don't have a Mac myself. I'm a Windows guy. How can I ensure, how can I check their complaints? Can I run tests on my PC? That's why we did the Outlook from Mac scenarios. So there is no SARA client from Mac at this point. Once we move ahead and see more demand for it, most probably we'll do it. So that's the reason why we did it. For tenant admins to run check on those connectivity issues when they get reports of connectivity issues from their Mac users. Okay?
If, hi. Yeah. If somebody's a resource, so resource mailboxes, that's a bigger one too, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody's a delegate and doesn't know they've stomped on somebody else's information. It's hard to explain that to a user sometimes and actually say you have to be careful because one, you're approving or you're disapproving something. Is there any changes to a UI to basically give them upfront information that to caution them about that?
Not at this point, for to kind of warn you something changed. Some guy came up to me after one of the shared presentation or the shared calendar presentations with a great piece of feedback that I think applies here too, is that if a principal has multiple delegates and all the delegates get the meeting invitation, if one responds then later the other responds not knowing that it's already been responded to, how can you let that other person know this has already been responded to? And I think those are kind of similar in that like you're taking an action that conflicts with something else. And that's easier to do with now the REST APIs because we can kind of return a specific thing that they can show, something like that. Don't have an answer right now, but we hadn't thought of that, so thanks for the feedback, and we'll try to figure out a way to do that.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so about the shared, the calendar sharing, in our organization, we have a lot of secretaries that they have access to conference rooms and stuff like that are restricted to them, right? And would that be something that you're also going to take the same approach as you're going to take for the shared calendars as well? Mainly because you said that they'll be able to see the delegates for or like people mailboxes, calendars on mobile devices, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. What about the resources calendars?
Yeah, that was actually something that got asked in the last session, and I haven't personally tested it. But we don't have anything specific looking for resource or person mailboxes. It's just a calendar that we're sharing out in our side. So I need to validate it to be 100% sure. But if it's not working today, that's a bug, and we'll fix it. So it will be consistent for resource and person mailboxes.
And another question that I would have is, we have the application called FindTime. Not sure if you should know.
Yeah.
Is there any way that we can get that one for inside Outlook without having to download it through the App Store?
Yeah, we're working on a lot of different scheduling scenarios right now. Nothing that we're ready to announce at Ignite right now, but stay tuned for some new stuff coming to scheduling soon.
Mm-hmm. We noticed that we do EWS filtering in our tenant due to the on a global organization level. And so we broke FindTime because we don't know the string on it, right? I opened a ticket with Premier support to find the string, and because it's a garage app, it's not supported by Premier support, right? So we are looking it up, and they told us to use the voice to find it. But so far, we couldn't get an answer for it. Maybe we can take it offline.
Yeah, I think the thing is stay very, very tuned for some new scheduling stuff coming out that will solve that problem for you.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
So my question is also about resource calendars.
Okay.
So when you're setting up a conference room calendar, you guys allow, it's great, you allow fields to put capacity and location. However, unless you're defining your calendars and, unless you define your calendars with some kind of a naming convention where it's, conference name, parentheses, capacity 6, location this, there's nothing that tells the person booking that that's a 6-person room. So you wind up having someone, booking a 20-person meeting in a 6-person room and they don't realize till they get there.
Yeah.
Has there been any thought about adding some sort of ability for a pop-up of saying, wait, that's an 8-person conference room. You can't use that for the amount of people that you're inviting into this before it actually gets sent.
Yeah, so a few things on that. One, this is something we heard from Compass customers just in April as well, so really near and dear. One immediate thing we talked about doing was, we know that when you create this, you fill in these fields, but then you also have to go manually do the display name. So one thing we talked about immediately, we should just have a default naming convention that takes into account all the detail you spent time giving us. So that's number one. Number two is kind of to my vague statement earlier on scheduling. There's a few things that go into scheduling, right? Who's there, who's most important, who's free or who's busy, but also where the meeting happens. And that is something we are working on right now to help you with both finding a time and finding a room.
And then, so following up on that, on the location piece, has there been any thought to being able to apply some sort of metadata where, if you know what your floor plan is, if you could tie an actual map to the conference room so that, like on a hover over or something, someone could actually see a physical location of where that conference room is on that floor, so they wouldn't just, they wouldn't get to floor two of building six and then go, okay, you know, where do I go from here?
Totally get it. The way that our calendar schema and calendar storage works today doesn't really support this kind of richness. It's also the reason we can't currently today do time to leave either. We are having discussions. In fact, they had one this morning in Redmond, of course, but like I saw the notes after. There's a team of people, really smart architects, working on how to improve the schema so we can do some stuff like this, this more intelligence on top of that. So. Okay. Thinking about it, hopefully something next year. Thank you.
Question is, I don't know if I dreamt this or heard you say it before, you have to be one of the hardest working people here. I've seen you three or four times going on, and I don't know how you do it. but the free busy.
I have a little battery pack back here that's actually not a speaker box.
Your throat must be killing you. Like, but the free busy, did you say at one point that externally we'll be able to share a free busy with like known companies that we do business with?
Absolutely, yeah. So I didn't touch too much on it, but we now allow you to share business to consumer with if the consumer account is an Outlook.com or Hotmail.com account. We also allow you to share business to any organization, whether or not you have federation with them. Read-only, though, outside your organization. Even if it's a federated org, it's still crossing the tenant boundary, and right now it's only read the three read levels that you can grant. It's basically when in the admin portal, they can say, I only allow sharing with these specific domains, or I allow sharing with anyone. And depending on what you have set up there, that determines who you can share externally with.
Awesome, and that's available now.
That will be available in Q4 when we announce the new sharing model.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. And sorry, one quick thing on that. If you're sharing with someone externally, when they're accepting within Office 365, they have that same accept experience. If they're using Outlook Mobile, they can accept from that. And they'll get it on their mobile devices and everything. Everything else holds true, except the instant syncing piece. Because these are two tenant boundaries, and we really want to respect tenant boundaries, we aren't doing the push out across tenant boundaries right now. So if I share to you and you're in another organization, you'll get the changes, on a more periodic basis. I can't remember the exact timeline, but it's not going to be instant.
So does that make everyone just have that default user or everyone user that basically?
No, the default user applies to your organization and federated organizations. But then you can also specifically share to individuals in any organization.
Okay. So, all right, I got it. Thank you.
Yeah, and find me afterwards if that didn't quite answer your question.
Got a Sarah question.
Sure.
A couple of Sarah questions. Mm-hmm. About a third of our service tickets are around Outlook, so it could be actually a helpful tool for us. However, we do use a non-Microsoft MDM tool. We also use a non-Microsoft authentication tool. And so the question I have is if they go to the mobile part about mail, or if they are having some issues with authentication and we are using a non-Microsoft tool, will it just kind of...
So at this time, we haven't tested the tool in those two scenarios. But we definitely want to support third-party auth solutions first, because auth comes first. Mm-hmm. And then most probably go towards supporting third-party MDM. So if you want to provide feedback, I mean, it's already there. Mm-hmm. We have that. We know about that. So, yeah, so it will happen with time. Right?
Just try it and see what happens. And if
definitely try and see what happens and provide feedback at the last screen. Why is it essential for you to have that? And number of users would help us prioritize that as well. Okay.
Okay. All right. Great. Cool. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's also about Sarah. It was if I recall correctly, briefly mentioned about hybrid. Does Sari also support hybrid?
Yes, so I didn't mention that specifically in the beginning, but I should have. So this is for Office 365, right? And if you are all in cloud or hybrid, so we support both. Okay. So yeah, you have to have on-prem, pure on-prem. The tool does not work today for
okay.
on-prem.
That was my other question.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. No, good question.
Couple of questions regarding sharing, right? So under the new model, does that do away with the limited number of connections you could have to any given mailbox? Or actually, there were a limit on the number of connections any particular user could have to exchange online. So I'm assuming this would alleviate or mitigate those scenarios?
Right. You now have fewer connections for your calendars. Now, if you're sharing mailboxes, that's going to be different. But for calendars, it will reduce those.
Okay. And then in terms of delegated, the sharee, right, would they always see every calendar that is shared to them? So again, we have scenarios, right, whether it's resource mailboxes or even power admins, right? They
yeah.
Tons of executives, right, don't necessarily need them to see all of them every single time.
Absolutely. So the calendar is only added to your calendar list everywhere you are if you accept the invite. So if I share to you, I've now granted you permissions.
Yep.
And you don't have to do anything. If you did nothing and you went into scheduling assistant, you would see my calendar, you could open my calendar, that kind of stuff. You, as soon as I share out, I've basically said, you have access to my calendar. When you accept the calendar is when we say, okay, you want this calendar to be part of your mailbox and go with you wherever you go. So it's only on accept that we create that local folder and start the syncing down. Otherwise, you just have permissions if you ever try to view my calendar.
And can you retroactively say, okay, I accept it because I'm supporting this person today, right? But next week.
Yeah, if you're done with it, you can just go remove it from your calendar list. So in Outlook on the web or Outlook desktop, you just say remove. And we don't remove your permissions to the calendar, we just remove it from your mailbox.
And then how do you get it back there to be reshared
You would
explicitly?
Just reopen, like you still have the sharing invite in your mailbox, you just click accept again, it comes back.
Okay.
There's a speaker thing here. One thing we are actually doing is trying to say, hey, we understand that there's a variety of reasons people share and that some organizations have the default user set to none, so it's not actually sharing, and that a lot of people share free busy. And so it's not going to be in this first phase, but we have plans to make the accept experience different based on the permissions you've been granted. So for example, if I share to you with only free busy access, that instead of showing a big blue accept button that users will be like, click, we kind of deprioritize it and we say add this calendar. It's not a big button. It's not super obvious to the user. So that they only add it if they really want it. But then if I grant you full details or edit access, meaning we really want to collaborate or really be in sync, then we'll make it that prominent accept experience so that the user says they see accept as finish the relationship. And they see add this calendar, I have permissions, and I just want to add it to my mailbox. So that's something long-term but not happening right now.
Follow-up, and again, it's not completely sharing. Organization relationships with a hybrid model, right? So one side of the organization is in a hybrid model, right? Some mailbox is on-prem, some in the cloud, and then you have a third party that we are doing an org relationship.
Yep.
Right now, we can only pick or choose, right? They can only see free busy or whatever we are sharing with one part of the hybrid, right? Either cloud or on-prem, depending on where the auto-discover ends up pointing. Is there any way where we can say, hey, this party can see the free busy regardless of where the mailbox is located?
Did you attend Sasha Mani's talk this morning
no.
about B2B collaboration? I'm pretty sure that's possible because we did a lot of work to kind of show some of the free busy sharing in there.
Okay.
But if you have your card, I can follow up with you. I'll ask Sasha and we'll follow up with you if you have an email address or something to give me.
Okay, I'll touch base.
Okay, cool, thank you.
I get the last USB drive.
All right.
Sharing throughout the organization, are they going to then, I think you said like retroactively you're going to catch up with all of that?
Yeah.
Okay, so we need to inform our users that that's actually going to be coming?
Yeah, so it will, yeah, it will be coming. The other thing is we recognize that after we upgrade every relationship, there's still people using older clients, right? Someone can still create a relationship from a 2013 client, and to be on the new model, both the share and the accept have to be on an updated client. So we're going to continually having something running through saying, are there any shared calendars on the old model? Upgrade them. So it's going to be a continuous thing, but it will start. We'll start these moves or upgrades sometime next year.
Okay.
Early next year.
And the little tail on question on free busy, I think he started down that path, and I might be going further on it. But hybrid organizations, that, well, like I go to share tenancy with them, I'm in an M&A scenario right now. Their targets for their email addresses are on-prem, but they're actually in the cloud. So I get the wrong target address for FreeBusy, and the on-prem does not redirect you to the cloud. Is that something that's going to be fixed?
Yeah, that sounds like a bug.
It's actually, I think, a fairly well-documented mess that Exchange on-prem does not do FreeBusy redirects, which is really weird.
Well, discover site scope on your on-prem CAS servers. You put your AD sites in there on one CAS server in any site, and it will work.
Okay.
You don't have that explicit relationship between AD site and a CAS server, then you're right. It goes nowhere, and you'll be.
Then you have a solution to a Microsoft problem that they've never been able to answer.
Well, I do see people's FreeBusy that are in our federated on-prem tenant. So that's why I think they must be doing maybe what you're setting. But yeah, so write your email address down twice, please, then. And actually, I'd love to hear more about this as well.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.